Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I am your host, Ben Standing, and I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. Hope everyone is doing well. It is freezing here in the DMV. I woke up and my phone said it was 25 degrees. Clearly, I didn't feel like getting out of bed or doing anything at that point. But I did because Jay Gruden and I had a chance to talk as we do on Wednesday morning. So I just wrapped up with Jay, got his view on this rematch, Commanders-Giants, huge game, obviously, for both teams this weekend. What's it like to coach against a team that you're facing for a second time? How does Washington slow down running quarterbacks that they've had issues with the last couple of weeks? And also, got some random questions. I asked him if there was an expansion draft and you can only keep three of these players on this team, who would you keep? And I did ask Jay about the Oversight Committee report. The report came out last Thursday, the day after Jay and I spoke. He was mentioned in that story or in the testimony by Dan Snyder. So I got his view on that as well. So we'll get to that in a moment here on the Standing Room Only podcast, which you can find on iTunes, Spotify, the Athletic app, or anywhere you do your podcasting. If you go to the Athletic app, it's an ad-free listen there. And of course, make sure you subscribe to The Athletic. If you subscribe to The Athletic, you get all of it. And I have a new story out today that I referenced a little bit with Jay about. Ron Rivera talked on Tuesday, gave us a bunch of injury updates, which I'll go through here in a second. But also for me, I just think it's an interesting thought of, and this sort of relates obviously to the quarterbacks, is how do you play, if you're Ron Rivera, the idea of, we got to win this game. We got to make the playoffs above and beyond. But if you get to the playoffs, are you putting yourself in the good enough position to beat the better teams, right? Because those are the teams that are in the playoffs. How do you do that? I think to me that's a pretty interesting debate, and that's kind of what I wrote about today, so you can check that out on The Athletic. Before we get to Jay, and just a couple of quick notes. So practice will be in just a couple of hours. So we'll learn more today about who is available and who is who's not practicing. Rivera gave us a laundry list of injury updates, some of which were surprising, some of which were vague. Jamin Davis had a procedure on his thumb. We say procedure, I guess he had some surgery. Rivera didn't go into detail about that. Maybe we can get that from Jamin Davis today. Rivera said Jamin Davis should be fine, that this was an injury he's been dealing with for some time. So the bye week worked out perfectly for that. But nonetheless, something to keep an eye on. It's ironic on some level with Cole Holcomb out and Jamin Davis having played better this year. You know, he's become a borderline indispensable player at this point, considering they just don't have any linebacker depth that we all know that. So, or, you know, nothing that you feel particularly strong about. So that was why I was initially like, oh, what's going on here? But Rivera's saying it shouldn't be a big deal. So we'll see if Jamin Davis is, in fact, back on the practice field this week. Montez Sweat and James Smith Williams, Rivera said, are still in the concussion protocol program. I don't know what to make of that from the standpoint of they had the week off. So I don't know if it's just sort of like there's, you know, it's not really until this week that they were back out in the field. So I don't know if it's something where they just weren't cleared because they weren't cleared, or they truly are still dealing with some things. Rivera didn't sound particularly worried about that, and suggested they could be back on the field today or Thursday, so we will see about that. Obviously, there's some potential irony, I guess, if this is the week that Chase Young is available to play, because, you know, we look back on it, Washington kind of has gotten, you know, injuries happen, as we know. They've had, you know, you look at all the positions on this team, the injuries or something has struck, pretty much every position. But the defensive ends have held up. Chase Young, James Smith-Williams, Casey Tuhill, F.A. Obata. And they had, you know, didn't have a ton of margin of error there because of the Chase Young injury. So hopefully these guys are okay. But it's sort of ironic, like I said, that maybe they would be out as Chase Young comes back. Rivera remains somewhat neutral, I guess, on Chase Young. He, you know, he tried to sound a bit more optimistic, said he had a good conversation with Chase Young on Tuesday, that Young's put in some good work the last few days. So again, it sounds hopeful to play, and that'd be great if he is. But at this point, you know, we've had this guessing game going on for weeks now. And, you know, I talked about this on the last podcast, that I did with Nikki Jobvala, how the, you know, the national media has kind of botched this thing 6 ways till Sunday. And we'll see. So I'm not going to guess anything. But look, if, you know, hopefully Chase Young is available. We'll find out later in the week. We've also got to pay attention to the offensive line. Trey Turner missed the last game with a knee and ankle issues. Then Sam Cosmi, who had started a right guard, he exited with an ankle injury. Rivera sounded slightly more, I guess, optimistic about Trey Turner than he did Sam Cosmi, but that's not to say Cosmi won't be available. We'll find out again today if he's out there on the field. I guess what's interesting for me about this one, and this is a little bit of what I wrote, is as you're going down the stretch here, the idea of putting Cosmi out on the field was in part because they didn't have Trey Turner, but also put your best five out there. And you've heard me argue for a while that best five would probably be with Cosmi and Lucas. But it's one thing to say that in the sort of the hypothetical. It's another thing to say that in the reality. And we're here in the stretch drive, and Washington's going to be facing teams with some really good defensive tackles or pass rushers down the stretch here. And then if you get to the postseason, that's really the case. Philadelphia, Minnesota, Dallas, San Francisco, like these teams have good interior players. So that'll be an interesting call for Rivera. I would imagine he stays with Cosmi, but you know, like I said, there's you know, learning on the fly to an extent, and we'll see how much they want to do that. As for speaking of the offensive line, a lot of you have been asking me, I don't know yet if it's going to be Wes Schweitzer or Nick Martin. I would think Wes Schweitzer, but again, we'll see that we'll clearly get a view of that today at practice, who's lining up with the ones during whatever drills we see during the open portion of practice. Lastly, Benjamin St. Juste. Obviously, there's concern there. He's missed the last 2 games with his mid to high ankle sprain. It's now 3 weeks. If it was just a flat out high ankle sprain, we probably would say he's out at least another week or two. The fact that they couched it as a mid to high, I don't know what to make of that. If he's not out there today, I guess I would start being a little nervous about his availability. And, you know, we've talked about this before, but facing Daniel Jones and a Marcus Mariota is a pretty good spot to be out, you know, one of your starting cornerbacks. At the same time, the Giants had some plays down the field, and clearly, you know, they're going to take a longer look to see what they can do to take advantage of Danny Johnson or Christian Holmes, if they're the ones out there. So the St. Juice and Cosmi, I didn't get the warm fuzzies from Rivera on their availability, but again, it's he talked on Tuesday. The game is Sunday night. We will see how that goes. Rivera also mentioned Antonio Gibson still getting some treatment on his foot, but seeing as how he played basically half the snaps last game, I wouldn't be too worried about that unless there was some aggravation, which at the moment I don't have any sense that that's the case. So there you go. That's the gist for the injury stuff. Again, we'll be back. We'll be out there today to get a better look, and I will have another podcast this week, so I will give you some more updates as we get closer to what is obviously a massive game on Sunday. You know, the odds for either team of making the playoffs shoot up significantly with a win. Go the other way, obviously, with a loss. You would own the head-to-head tiebreaker and, of course, jump the other team in the standings with only 3 games to go at that point. So, huge game, needless to say, and we'll get a better feel for that this week. I'm going to talk to one of our Giants beat reporters later this week, so we'll get the inside scoop on what's happening with New York. All right, let's get to it. always an interesting conversation with Jay Gruden. We bounced around all over the place talking about Commanders Giants, asked him about the Oversight Committee report, who do you keep in an expansion draft. I got a little bit also about NFL quarterbacks. Fun stuff. Let's get to it right now here on the Standard Room Only podcast. All right. It is our chance midweek, as we do every week here on the podcast, to talk to former Washington coach Jay Gruden. And Jay, appreciate the time. I don't know. It gets bye week. We don't really have anything to discuss off of what just happened. So we'll just start with this. How was your bye week, so to speak?
That was good. Everything's the same here. Just playing golf and having some fun, enjoying life in Florida. So nothing has changed for me.
Are you, like, when you're going out there, is your goal to play golf? Is it literally just relaxation? Or are you going like, okay, today or this week, I'm working on my short game. I got to figure out how to get, you know, my, you know, my nine irons in. Like, are you like that focused the way you were like the coaching?
Yeah, pretty much. Depends on which TikTok I see. You know, I watch golf TikToks with Phil Mickelson and Lee Trevino and Roy McIlroy and Tiger Woods, and I get these certain lessons, whether short game or stuff, and I try to take it on the range. You know, usually I forget about it by number two, and I'm back to my old crappy self, but it's fun to try new stuff.
Well, what's like the goal today? You're going out after we talk, so what's like
going the for focus the course today? Record today? You know, I always start with the course record, and then when you realize you can't get that by hole number two, then you try another goal. You just try to par out or try to make a birdie, focus on your putting, whatever. But every shot, that's why golf is so great, because every shot's so different. You can't just focus on one area because there's so many different shots, whether it's your long game, your long irons, your short irons, your putting, your chipping, your, you know, bumping runs, whatever it might be, your flop shots. There's so many different shots. That's why it's so challenging and fun.
Whenever I watch, you know, the professionals play, and you're right, like they'll be in some completely it's one thing to sort of say you're in the pine straw behind a tree, but it could be 110 yards, it could be 230 yards, and like how do you know what to do? I mean, I know this is what they do, but you know what I mean, like it's like they couldn't have been in that spot before, but yet somehow they have to have, you know, figured out enough to know what to do.
It's hard to practice every shot. That's why, you know, when you watch these guys on tour, you realize how special they are and how gifted they are and how hard it is to become where they are. We have a couple, you know, we have a young kid here who's just turned 14 who's who beat Charlie Woods by like 12 shots in the tournament. He's like the number one kid, and just to watch him up here practice and how much time he spends up here on the range and practicing and playing, you can tell special players, and he's going to be one of them. I mean, it's just fun to watch him.
Wow. All right. Well, good stuff there. All right. Let's get to what you are. Well, you've put a lot of hours at perfecting and crafting, and that's football talk. It's a rematch this week, as we know, which is the weirdest thing. I think I saw some stat. It's like the third time since like 1950 that a team has played the same team in back-to-back games that they have played. So that's pretty weird. But in general, when you're playing a team for a second time, what do you do from a game planning perspective? I mean, obviously, if you got blown out, you're probably going to change things or whatever. But like, how much do you look at like to change what you do because they already saw it versus, hey, you know what? We're going to just do what we do and not worry about kind of what they're going to react to.
A little bit of both. I think there has to be some merit in how did they try to defend your run game? What kind of front were they playing? Five down, four down? Were they bringing a safety, nickel, whatever they were doing? So you have to make sure you combat against that. Make sure you have the ability to get to something else if you had some problematic looks. Fix those. I think the most important thing after watching the first game was protections. I think Washington has to do a better job of recognizing the fronts and adjusting their protection as needed. Whether it's a scat protection, whether it's a five-man protection, six-man protection, trying not to rely on keeping the tight end and the back end going to max protection or throwing quick screens out there. They got to do a better job on third down of trying to protect Heinicke with Wink Martindale's unique blitz package. That's what they can focus on this week.
You know, you mentioned the protection, and obviously tight ends are a factor. One thing I think is interesting is, okay, on the one hand, you've got Terry McLaurin, Curtis Samuel, and Jahan Dotson, pretty valuable players that, you know, for an offense that's not very explosive, you need these guys out on the field and get touches. And they all did pretty well in the first game. However, I mean, only one tight end if you're going with the three. And while Logan Thomas is the starter, John Bates is clearly the better blocker of the two. How do you counterbalance that? The idea of, like, if you want to go two tight ends to help offset what the Giants are doing from a rush perspective, but also, but if you go with one, Bates or Thomas, versus the explosiveness that you get from the three receivers.
Yeah, that's the thing I always dealt with when I had, you know, Jordan Reed and Vernon Davis and Sprinkle. We loved our three tight end sets. We loved our two tight end sets. But when you do that, Crowder's on the bench. You know, so you're got to balance that. You're trying to figure out what looks you're going to get. And if you line up with two tight ends, are you still going to get sub packages on defense, which will help you in the running game, so to speak? It should. It takes a big out of the game and brings a little into the game, and you can run the ball, obviously. But targeting is the different issue. Is are you going to target your center, going to go to the nickel? Is he going to go to the safety? And sometimes it becomes chaotic in that regard. I think their best personnel grouping are their best players when they have whoever the tight end is, the best blocker, Bates or Logan Thomas, the one tight end with Samuel, McLaurin, and Dotson on the field at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like the way to go. I'm going to ask you a really radical idea here. We talk so much about, okay, so Taylor Heineke's going to start this week, but Carson Wentz is now back on the active roster, and he is the backup. We'll see how long they stay in that scenario. Is there a world, instead of just saying, we'll pick this guy or that guy, is there a world where they could play them both? Because, like, Wentz is, I don't know, but got better in the red zone, perhaps, because of his size, and Heineke does, you know, with his mobility. I don't know what he wants playing two quarterbacks, but is there any sense to even thinking about that?
I don't think so. You know, I thought about that one year when we had a couple quarterbacks that were, you know, neither one of them was really separating himself from the other. And then you say, okay, you got the first quarter, second quarter, but, you know, you want your quarterback to get in the rhythm. You know, when I played at Louisville with Howard Schnellenberger my first couple of years, he always brought me in as a young kid in the second quarter of the game to get me two or three series to get some valuable experience as a true freshman. He'd bring back the starter and what have you. So there's some merit to that. But I think this day and age, you got to let your quarterback roll unless he is really cold, unless he's not seeing things well, he's not throwing the ball well. He has that look in his eyes where he's not very confident. And you can kind of feel that. Then you have to make a change and go to the bigger quarterback and try to get a spark. That would be the only scenario I could see where they make a change.
Yeah, I mean, I it seems a little radical. I should say a Twitter follower, Ed O'Brien, sent me that message, asked me that. And I was like, you know what? We keep talking about this. And if you, like I've said before, if you could, you know, Dr. Frankenstein these two guys, with Heineke's moxie and mobility and Wentz's size and arm strength, be pretty good. But, you know, that's
not when I was in high school as a junior, our starting quarterback was an option quarterback, and I was a passing quarterback. And on third down, I'd come run out on the field to throw the ball. So,
yeah,
that's a possibility. But I think Heineke needs the job, needs the ball, because even though it's a passing situation, his ability to scramble and make plays with his legs are what has gotten Washington to where they are. You know, his ad lib plays, his off schedule plays is his strength. And you don't want to change that up right now.
By the way, I'm just thinking, I guess you are the are you the second most famous quarterback to have played under Howard Schnellenberger with Bernie Kosar?
I'm way down there. I'm probably about 20th. He's got Bernie, Jim Kelly, Vinny. He's got a lot of them. Browning Nagel, Jeff Brom. He's got a lot of them.
Yeah, you know, I was trying to help the cause. Yeah, that Miami team, the one that beat Nebraska, that was a fun team. All right, let me ask you the other side. So one thing that the defense has obviously been very good most of the year at this point, but the last couple of games against Atlanta and the Giants, the running quarterbacks have gotten that. Both Marcus Mariota and Daniel Jones have gotten good yards. What's the challenge when you're looking at that to try to stop the running quarterback? What's the thing that you try to accomplish, and how do you think Washington can do whatever that is?
Well, it depends. How are they getting their yards? Is it on the zone reads? Is it the quarterback design runs? Or is it just when he drops back the pass and scrambles for yards? So there's different ways to stop both of those. If it's a drop back and he's scrambling for yards, sometimes it's a third and 12 and he gets 9 yards, that's no big deal. But if he's running for first downs, then you have to work on your pass rush lanes. You might have to spy the quarterback, rush one less guy and play a spy. And try to chase them around like that. But you do lose part of your pass rush which hurts you a little bit. We'll give Daniel more time, but it will limit his scramble yards. And if it's a quarterback design yards or quarterback design runs like zone reads or the quarterback just pulling it and running behind pulling guards and stuff, that's tough. That's real tough. You just got to work on your run fits and get your safeties and corners ready to tackle.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it felt like with Mariota, it felt like it was a little more design. With Daniel Jones, it felt it was more taking what was there, that they, you know, once the play broke down and he kind of took off. So I guess there's a little bit of difference in there. Is there anything? I guess a lot of variables for this game is going to be, you know, who's going to even be available. You know, guys like Benjamin St. Juice in the secondary, will Chase Young even play? Actually, speaking of Chase Young, let me ask you this. Obviously, I know you're not there, so you're not familiar exactly with what's going on, but it seems like he's been medically cleared now for a few weeks, and the issue seems to be confidence, that Rivera has mentioned over that Chase Young has to get confidence on that knee. I can't remember if I asked you about this last time, but what can you do when the doctor is telling you, hey, he should be good, he just has to believe, basically, to help the guy get over whatever hump he has to get going?
Yeah, I mean, that's the combination. You got to have the doctors okay, and then you got to have the players okay, and this player's willingness to go back out there and compete at the level he needs to compete at to be successful. You know, if he's being guarded and he's protecting his knees and he's not playing with that relentless effort because he's a little skittish, then he's not ready in my mind. You have to see him play it with reckless abandon and play hard and playing fast, because that's what made him the first pick in the draft, is his ability to run around the corner, play fast, play reckless, and be a factor. If he's a non-factor, if he's not playing fast, if he's not finishing plays, then he's not ready. And sometimes it takes guys a little bit longer than others, and there's nothing wrong with that, because I've had one of those things before, and I can remember my first time in the pocket trying to throw a pass. I was a little nervous, man. I feel the people around my legs, and I didn't want to get that thing hurt again. But after a while and after some time, I was able to step into some throws and become the great Arena Football League quarterback that I became. but it is scary, man. It is scary. Your initial days, first couple days back in pads and then full contact. It's scary.
I always think that's, you know, when a player is physically hurt, we're conscious of the fact as observers that he's dealing with the knee or he's limping or something, but the mental part, we can't see that, right? A person could be appear to be in a great mood and be completely depressed or whatever it is, or in this case be a little bit nervous. And I always think that's such a variable that we on the outside just don't fully appreciate, or don't give anybody, the players or even coaches.
Think when you have a bruise or something like that, or even a bum shoulder, coming back is no big deal. But when you blow your knee out, I mean, it's different. It's just different when you feel your knee just pop, 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 and then you have no. It's a different feeling when you come back. You just don't have that quite confidence. That takes some time. And I think once he gets there, he'll become the player he once was. It'll just take some time.
You mentioned shoulder, and it reminds me that, you know, you were there when the team drafted Jonathan Allen, and he was supposed to be like a top five pick. He slides to you guys to 17 because the belief was that there were medical reports concerned with his shoulders, that he would have a shorter career basically because of whatever medical staff was viewing. Obviously, you guys decided wasn't enough of a concern to pass. Took him, and obviously he's been really good. Do you recall what the deal was with that?
I don't recall the exact deal, but I know that there was a red dot on his name by a lot of teams, and I think that's the only reason. I know that's the reason why he fell to us, because there's no way he would have fallen unless there was a medical concern, and there was a medical concern with his shoulder. And it's funny how those concerns work in the draft. Some teams have red dots, and some teams ignore them and draft them. It just depends on the doctor. You see them at the combine, you talk to their doctor, but then you bring them into your building and you get them checked out by your own doctor and your own trainers. And every doctor and every trainer on every organization have different views, so to speak. Some of them are similar, but sometimes you get different views. And fortunately for us, our trainer, Larry Hess, and our team doctor said he can sustain that shoulder and have a pretty good career, which he has.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that, you know, Montez Sweat was another one who, you know, his concern was something to do with his heart that dropped him from being a potential top 10 pick down to 26 when you guys traded back. So it's kind of odd that two guys on the defensive line that obviously is the huge key to this team both fell because of
The more you dig on these guys, the more you can find something. Sometimes the less you know, the better, because you just want the player, the kid. You know, Jonathan's a great kid and great player. I mean, let's just take them, you know. Forget it. Forget these damn doctors. And so it's just hard in the draft process. There's so many variables off the field, medical, what kind of fit will he be? You know, let's take the best player and the best kid. And luckily, we got him.
Yeah, I mentioned to you that I was going to ask you a sort of a silly question here, but I love this type of question. Let's just say hypothetically, the NFL is announcing they're going to expand. They'll put one team in St. Louis and, I don't know, one team in London or Portland or something. And each NFL team can only protect a certain amount of players. This is how these things work in anyway. But just for fun, we'll say you can only protect three. Looking at this roster, what three guys would you protect? We don't have to worry too much about contracts, meaning if a guy's about to be a free agent, we can sort of ignore that aspect of it or whatever. But for you, like, because there's obviously some interesting talent. If three is too limiting and you want to talk me up into a bigger number, let me know. But who would be like three guys that you would say, I got to keep this guy no matter what?
Yeah, well, I went through expansion drafts when I was in the Arena League. Those are actually kind of fun. Typically, you get to protect about 20 of your 25, 28 guys.
Right.
Not three of your 53. But at three would be, you got to protect Terry, Scary Terry. You got to protect one of your defensive linemen, either Payne or Allen. I would probably take, you can twist my arm either way. That'd be a discussion. Then you got to take either Sweat or Chase Young, in my opinion. Those are your three best, most game-changing type players in my mind. You got a speed receiver that changes the course of the game. You got a defensive lineman, one of those two defensive linemen, and one of those pass rushers. And then, because I don't think any offensive lineman is worth protecting, really. Running back, you can argue about Brian. Quarterback, obviously not. Secondary, I don't think you have a true lockdown corner. Safeties, you can get safeties anywhere. So, yeah, I'd probably do those three.
Well, but you got to pick Allen or Payne.
Well, I'd probably take, since I'm going to probably get, a healthy Chase Young or Sweat, I'd probably take Payne.
Really?
Actually,
okay.
It really doesn't matter to me. They're both good, but I'd probably take Payne just because, Payne seems to be, he's a year younger, I believe, and maybe he doesn't have the shoulder issue.
Right.
Well, they're both great players. I love them both, so it doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, I love the idea of – I love the expansion draft when you do have to determine, like, who to protect and the gaming that goes into that.
You might take Payne and Allen and bag Sweat and Chase Young. You know, that's not a bad way to go either.
Right. Well, and, of course, that is, like, sort of what we're dealing with right now for that – the team was dealing with in real time in terms of, you know, Payne's contract, and are they going to keep all four, and if not – who do you keep? Who do you let go? So they're actually sort of having to deal with this sort of debate right now. Let me ask you a different question. So I wrote something today for The Athletic about for a team in Washington situation, how does a coach balance? You got to win the next game. You got to make the playoffs before you can think about what you do in the playoffs, while simultaneously thinking, if we make the playoffs, how do we really succeed? How do we raise the ceiling, give ourselves the best chance to win, which may be different than saying we got to beat the Giants in this sort of grind it out kind of a way. And to that end, a lot of it has to do with like your opponent. To look further ahead, just for fun, who do you think, if they get the 6th or 7th seed right now, would be Minnesota or San Francisco? Based on how this team is playing with this grinded out style and how they are on defense, who do you think is the better opponent for them that would give them an actual chance to, to possibly win?
Wow, that's a tough one. You know, I think no coach ever wants to look ahead like that. You know, you kind of do it in the back of your mind, but
well, I certainly would. I wouldn't ask you this in a press conference because you'd yell at me.
Where would you rather go? Would you rather play at Minnesota with that huge crowd? It's going to be loud as hell, or would you rather travel cross country and play at San Francisco? Crowd's not as bad, but you're cross country. I'd probably rather just stay at East Coast and play at Minnesota. They played pretty well against Minnesota. They had them on the ropes. They had a pick six that would have put the game away, but it was called back. I think they would feel confident about, unless they play San Francisco next week and beat the dog tar out of them, then it might change. You know what I mean? So right now, before they play San Francisco next week, I'd say San Fran. But if they beat San Fran in a week, I'd say go cross. I never wanted to travel cross country. I never wanted to go to California. It just takes a lot out of your team. So I'd prefer to go to Minnesota's not a short trip. I get it, but it's a lot closer than San Fran.
Right. And sort of what I'm also thinking is, like, if you're staying with Heinicke, which is, I get it, you know, Minnesota, their secondary is pretty weak. Like, you can take advantage of them, but that's not Heinicke's strength. On the flip side, Heinicke's mobility would probably be beneficial against San Francisco's pass rush, especially, you know, with Washington's offensive line being a little bit leaky. And then on the other hand, though, it's Kirk Cousins, a veteran quarterback, versus a guy right now with Brock Purdy, who's, you know, started one game. He looked really good, but one game for the guy that was the last pick of the draft. And it feels like, looking at that, I was like, boy, there's really some interesting comparison and contrast here of, like, which way to go.
Yeah, I think they have excellent chance with whoever they have to play. But, yeah, I think a lot will be dependent on how they do against San Fran. San Fran, you know, if they stay healthy with the majority of their other guys, I know they'll get Debo back for the playoff run, but if their offensive line stays healthy, they still got Christian McCaffrey, they got George Kittle, they got Brandon Ayuk, they got Jennings. They're pretty damn good. They can hit you a lot of different ways still. You don't have to throw the ball 50, 60 yards to be successful in a good offense. You know, throwing the ball to Kittle across the middle for 10, 12 yards, or McCaffrey out of the backfield on a check wide. A lot of guys can do that, and definitely Purdy can do that, and he can be successful.
Well, and that's kind of where Washington is at right now, right? Where get the ball in the hands of their playmakers and not make Heinicke have to throw the ball down the field, throw it short or underneath or whatever, and let them do the work instead of him trying to, you know, get it down there. Yeah,
exactly right. And then if play good defense and play good special teams, and you'll have a chance in every game that you play.
But I want to ask you another couple football questions, but let me just – I meant to ask you earlier just to circle back. Last week, the day after you and I talked, is when the Oversight Committee dropped its report about its findings into this organization. Obviously, some of it included time when you were here. You know, look, obviously, you know, you were mentioned in there. I won't ask you about your brother because I know he's got some legal things going on. But what did you kind of make of the report broadly, both if you want to comment on the fact that you were mentioned and or just how sort of Dan Snyder, the Bruce Allen of it all?
Well, I think when you start trying to point fingers and blame other people, I think that's where the problem starts right there. You know, it's very similar to when you're a football coach, you go through some tough times and people start pointing at each other, you have no chance. But once people start accepting blame and accepting responsibility, then you have a chance to fight your way through it and become a better organization or a better team. And it's clear that they have a lot of work to do in that regard, because the key players in that organization are still trying to blame other people for nonsense, for pictures that came up 5 or 6 years ago in the summertime and making it out to be something that it wasn't. So it doesn't surprise me that this thing is still going on. I just want to be through with it and enjoy my time and not worry about Googling myself and seeing my picture in a paper over some nonsense from 6 years ago.
All right. Fair enough. I appreciate that. Let me broaden out the football conversation, because obviously we're getting right near to the playoffs, and I think we're all trying to figure out who are the contenders. I won't put for Super Bowl contenders. I won't put Washington in that category unless you want to. But, like, obviously Kansas City is one of those teams. Buffalo is one of those teams. I kind of think Cincinnati is right there with them. I mean, they've beaten Kansas City now three times in the last calendar year. And I guess it begs the question of, we talk about Mahomes and Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, is it time to make that a three-way conversation with him and those two guys, or do you still see a gap between Allen, Mahomes, and Burrow?
It was time last year when he went to the Super Bowl. So, yes, I take Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow is definitely in that class. He's in the top class in the NFL right now. There's no doubt about it. I mean, if you're drafting a quarterback and you got all 32 quarterbacks available, you'd have to really think long and hard about passing on Joe Burrow, even if Mahomes and Josh Allen and Aaron Rodgers are on the board. It's a major discussion. The way he plays, the way he competes, he's got enough mobility. His accuracy is uncanny. He's tough. He's obviously loved by his teammates, as are, you know, most of those other guys too. But I'm a huge Joe Burrow fan. I think for sure he's up, and I'd take him first or second.
Yeah, I think I would take him over Josh Allen. I mean, Mahomes is kind of hard to argue against, but I love Joe Burrow. I just love the way he plays, and there's something, you know, the mentality thing. It's like he's got the arm strength.
Three times in a row he's beaten Mahomes, so be careful.
Right. I mean, I saw somebody the other day mention this, like, should it be discussed? I'm like, what do you mean should it be? I think it's already there. He's beating Mahomes. I mean, three in a row. Like, what do you want? I know it's not just him, but
lost by a couple ticks on the clock. Yeah. So
yeah. Well, and just lastly, so the game obviously this weekend, huge game for Washington and for the Giants. What's your gut tell you about what happens in this rematch, and what do you think is ultimately the key in this game?
I think the key is Washington needs to figure out a way to start fast. If they can start fast and put their foot on a pedal early, then I think Giants have a chance to fold. And if they turn into the Giants into a one-dimensional passing attack, it's a wrap. And I think it can be flipped the other way. If the Giants start fast and make Washington one-dimensional, it'll be a wrap that way. But I think I mentioned this before, there's blood in the water. I think if the Washington team can attack them early, get on them early, flex their muscles early, then I think it should be a pretty easy game. Not easy, but I think it should be a lopsided game. However, if they turn the ball over and give the Giants a chance that they feel like at halftime that it's a close game, then it'll be a dogfight till the tail end again. But I think for Washington to pull away, they need to step on the gas early.
Fair enough. All right, go shoot the course record. You know, let us know, you know, keep notes, so we know what you can tell us what happened next week.
Course record 60. So,
who shot that?
I don't know. Some guy I never heard of. So I'm going to go for it today.
All right. Good luck. All right, man. Appreciate it. See ya.